Hello and welcome to Feel Good with Jo, your Friday guide to leading a happy and healthy life. I'm Jo Sumner, holistic therapist, coach and yoga teacher. And each show, I interview an expert in health and well-being to get their tips and techniques for managing the often busy and stressful lives we lead. Today, I'm joined by Jane Michel of Jane Plan, a diet-to-your-door service at exceptional prices. Jane and I are going to be talking about eating for happiness and health and sharing a little of Jane's story in the weight management arena. Hi, Jane, and welcome.
Hello, Jo. Thank you very much.
So let's start off with how you got started in the world of food.
Well, I actually started very much, funnily enough, in the world of food rather than weight loss. I worked straight after university with the BBC, and I worked alongside people like Delia Smith, Rick Stein, that very first generation of TV cooks, which of course was very inspiring, in fact, seeing all those delicious recipes in front of my eyes every day. and that really led me on to obviously have a good intrinsic interest in food, but I wouldn't say necessarily particularly weight loss at that stage, although I have to say I did have a slight issue with my own weight. I was in my early 20s, of course. Nothing to do with my job whatsoever. I just loved eating good food, like we all do. Exactly. So I did go on and do, in fact, an American weight loss program, and I lost a considerable amount of weight. Mainly because actually I was kind of going out with this guy and he weighed a lot less than me. So I didn't want to be the heavier partner. Anyway, I was successful in the weight loss program, and actually, you know, 25 years later, unbelievably, I'm still pretty much the same weight. So there I am, happily working at the BBC, engulfed in lots of delicious food. But I had three children, and after my third, I thought this job's actually getting too much, really. So I left and I retrained. I did a course in nutrition. I became a nutritionist, and I specialised in the weight loss arena, working for a number of years, in fact, at the Princess Grace Hospital, where I looked after all sorts of patients, people challenged by their weight in an everyday sort of way, but people also who had gastric bands, gastric bypasses, and other types of bariatric surgery.
So my curiosity is, was it always obvious to you that that there's such a strong link between food and emotion?
Yes, I have to say, it's all about the head. It's not about the tummy at all. And in fact, quite often when clients say to me, oh, I was hungry, the next question I ask them will try and help me work out, was it physiological hunger? Was it psychological hunger? Was it head hunger? I mean, actually, biologically speaking, the emotion center of the brain is bang next door to the appetite center. So it's actually not at all surprising that, in fact, eating is very much tied up with our emotions. And one thing I feel quite sad about, and I often hear women saying, oh, I'm an emotional eater, I can't control it, as if it's their fault. But actually, it's a very natural response to some of our emotions to turn to food.
And that's a really interesting point. I'm not sure that I've ever heard anybody express it quite like that, that it's a natural connection.
Absolutely, yes.
And not something that, you know, we have such a tendency to pick things up and beat ourselves over the head and think it's some kind of character flaw or personality trait. Yes, I'm an emotional eater, as if it's something that can't ever be changed. So is it something that can be changed? And how do you go about helping people change?
It's absolutely something that can be changed and something that can be dealt with. I think one of the things is to try and channel emotional feelings away from food and do other things instead. So it's very, you know, we all know the scenario, hard day at work, I come home, or perhaps picking up the children from school, bad traffic jam on the way home, walk through the door, things aren't really going well, we're feeling a little bit down, feeling a little bit emotional, what do we turn to? We turn to food. But if we can become very conscious of turning to food and think, no, I won't do that, I will do something else instead. It could be a case of getting out into the garden. Obviously, being out in the sunshine can lift your emotions, make you feel better. If you're not looking after children, it could be a case of actually getting out of the house completely. Walk through the door, drop the handbag, change the stilettos, pop on the trainers, and off you go, be it a walk or a run. It will make you feel better. It will release endorphins that make you feel better. It could be whizzing upstairs, lighting a candle, a lovely bath oil, and relaxing in the bath. So when I think an emotional eating moment comes on, and you could be tired, you could be hungry, you could be lonely, you could be happy, you could be bored. Find something else to do that does not involve food. And crucially, get out of the kitchen. Because once you're in there and you can see food and eat it wins every time.
Absolutely. I have in the past actually put on the fridge door, are you actually hungry?
Yes.
So that I have to ask myself that question every yes. time I open it.
Exactly.
And I found out something for myself about when I reach for food when I'm not actually hungry, which is it's boredom for me.
Yes.
More than any of the other emotions, more than, you know, feeling down or feeling happy. Or it's actually when I'm bored and I'm actually just thinking, oh, I don't really know what to do with myself right now.
Yes.
And reaching for something in the fridge or in the cupboards, my response to that
yes.
is it's this sort of, oh, I feel slightly at a loss for a moment.
Yes, yes.
And eating covers that up in a way.
Absolutely. I mean, we know one of the classic thing. We've come into the kitchen to make a cup of tea. Of course, it takes 3 minutes to boil the kettle, and an enormous amount of damage can be done to the biscuit tin in that time.
Yeah.
So you're so right. And I think often, especially people who are at home a lot, either they're working at home or their mum's at home or perhaps they're retired, and there's no structure to the day, or there's less structure to the day, perhaps I should say. I think then often people emotionally eat, or they eat for boredom, or they nibble, or they graze in a way that's perhaps they're not conscious of really what they're doing. So yes, you can change these things. I think one crucial thing, a way of changing things, are actually write it down. Keep a food and a mood diary. What you're eating, when you're eating it, and how you're feeling just before you eat.
Mm.
You could also write down how you're feeling just after you eat if you really wanted to. I think one very easy way of distinguishing what I would call an emotionally eating episode versus a eating because I'm hungry episode, people often feel quite guilty after they've eaten when they've eaten for reasons other than hunger. So you think it's going to boost your mood.
And it actually doesn't.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's also an interesting one for reducing how much you drink. So if you've, you know, if you've got into that habit, which is so easy to do, of opening a bottle of wine at dinner and, you know, perhaps there's two of you and you have half a bottle each.
Yeah.
One of the things that I found very helpful is just actually noticing, after glass number one, how do I feel?
Yes.
After glass number two, how do I feel? After glass number three, if I ever get there, how do I feel? Because I actually learned that after glass one, I feel great. After glass two, it actually stops tasting nice.
Yes.
But by then, there's a habit.
Yes. And actually, you're right. Once you've got to the end of glass two, glass three is almost a sort of byproduct of it. You're almost inevitably going to do it. But in
right.
fact, you won't really notice it, and you probably won't enjoy it nearly as much. And I think there's something to be learned from the French here, actually. They are brilliant at eating incredibly high quality food and drinking incredibly high quality wine in small quantities. And have you ever noticed if you have a tiny square of chocolate that you feel fulfilled? Yet it takes an entire dairy milk to have the same effect with milk chocolate. Chocolate. So little yeah. and often, small quantities of the highest quality, I think often is a good philosophy going forward.
And all the women in my family, being half French, are going, yes, we were right all along.
Yes.
So in terms of types of food then, so with talking about happiness and health,
yes.
so are there types of food that can help us be happy?
Yes, absolutely. And they're not necessarily the obvious ones. We're all thinking immediately, oh, it must be a cream cake. Well, it may be a cream cake, but there are other ones as well. Food definitely affects our mood. And of course, what is happiness? Happiness is one person. It's something completely different to somebody else. So if you want to start your day in what I call a happy way, I think starting with something like porridge oats is very good because it's very, very calming. So if you have that feeling of, oh my God, get up, rush to the office, get the children to school, that awful stress, just to calm yourself down, give yourself a little bit more happiness, a bit more breathing space in the morning, porridge oats is a good one. Bananas are brilliant. Stick them in your handbag, stick them in the car, full of potassium, and they immediately boost your mood. So there are an awful lot of things that you can do to make you feel happy. And I would avoid the obvious confectionery snacks and, if you can, the glasses of wine, and stick more towards the fruit bowl, a few porridge oats, and even, you know, nuts and seeds again. Level out the mood, make you feel calm, get some good nutrients into you.
So it's just as you were talking about porridge oats, it really reminded me that, you know, oats are actually anti-inflammatory.
Yes.
And it makes so much sense to me that that should be something, you know, something soothing and nourishing, exactly as an anti-inflammatory would be expected to be.
Absolutely, yes.
So in terms of that awful craving, you know, let's say somebody's struggling with a craving and most of the time they do really well and then it all goes out the window because, you know, it gets to the time of day when it's got to be chocolate and nothing else will do.
Yes.
What do you suggest for managing cravings?
Well, it really depends on the individual, but I have this expression called cruise through cravings.
Right.
And some people, I can tell that the only food will do. And then I think there again, there are lots of strategies. We can adopt the French strategy, which is a tiny piece of green and blacks as opposed to a whole Mars bar. Getting out of the kitchen, the see food and eat it philosophy again. I have the cleaning teeth philosophy. Keep your toothbrush in the downstairs loo. You can whiz in, clean your teeth and enter the kitchen again with a fresh mouth. And find decoys. So if a craving happens, as it often does at children's tea time, or about sort of 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and often children have higher sugar foods, higher fat foods, of course they shouldn't, but they do. That just seems to be the way that we're working now. Have a bowl of crudité on the cake table. So you're not nibbling at the fish finger. You're not finishing off the untouched fry. You're actually eating the carrots and the cucumber. And of course, you're teaching your children as well that that's quite fine to nibble on things like that. So I would find a decoy rather than give into it. And cravings also are partly habit. And once you do that day after day after day, you'll soon find that the craving actually does go. A bit like, dare I say it, giving up smoking.
Yeah, and that's an interesting one, isn't it? One of the things that I think is really interesting at the moment is people wanting so much to know more about where their food's coming from.
Yes, provenance is very big.
And, you know, the number of farmers markets, even in really highly urban areas, really great farmers markets. And that's one of the things that I think helps a great deal. If you have an understanding of where your food is coming from, and you're concerned to eat in as sustainable a fashion as possible, it becomes easier to make healthier choices in terms of portion size,
absolutely,
in terms of making sure that there's variety. But also, I'm interested in seasonal eating and what's good at what times of year for happiness and health. Is there anything on that you can share with us?
Yes, well, September, beautiful month, sun's often shining. We're sort of thinking, gosh, the real summer fruits, the peaches and the nectarines have finished. But actually, you can go to blackberries, full of antioxidants, or figs, one of my favourites. Again, full of potassium, will lift and boost the mood. Going into winter, warming, comforting foods. That doesn't mean high sugar, high fat fried food. That means things like butternut squash, pumpkins, homemade soups, using plenty of herbs, using garlic to enhance the flavour of some of the root vegetables. Of course, going into spring, it's very, very easy because everything is so fresh and so vibrant. Broad beans, just with a little squeeze of lemon, will just really zest up your plate, whatever you're serving them with. And of course, summer is so easy because we've got the vibrancy of all the red fruits, which boost the mood, give us a bit of energy. And in fact, there's a lot of indications say even the colour red can actually reduce lethargy. So if you want an energy boost, have a look at the strawberries.
That makes perfect sense. And one of the things I do is teach meditation, and red is all to do with the base chakra, base energy centre at the bottom of the spine. And that is, it's vitality.
Yes.
It's get up and go. It's zing and zip.
Yes.
So that makes perfect sense to me. So just very quickly then, total no-nos. What are the total? They don't offer us anything.
It's got to be sugar. And I'm sorry. And I know it covers such a wide variety of sins. So I think if I had to really narrow it down, I would say shop-bought biscuits and cakes, I think, are the no-no. Because if I say sugar, it's such a broad spectrum.
Yes.
So shop-bought biscuits and cakes, I think, should be not in the shopping trolley.
Good, that's very clear.
That doesn't mean you can't do a bit of home baking and boost your mood, of course. Lovely. Every so often.
So if people want to find out more about Jane Plan and about the diet that you deliver, where do they go?
Well, they can visit our website, which is www.jane.com. janeplan.com. They can telephone us at any time, and there's a phone number on the website, or they can just email me, and I am jane@janeplan.com. And we'd love to hear from anybody.
Oh, that's fantastic. And Jane actually also has a very active Facebook site. So yes. You can just search for Jane Plan on Facebook. Thanks so much for joining us today, Jane.
Pleasure. Thank you.
And looking forward to the next Feel Good with Jo, your Friday guide to leading a happy and healthy life. Brooklyn's Radio.